Now, it seems as though the medical establishment has for years been telling new mothers that when it comes to feeding, breast is best. But in fact, over the last decade, research about what's best for babies has actually come up with some pretty mixed results, with some studies only showing minor health benefits and others finding none or contradicting what came before. However, last week, the World Health Organization concluded a mega review of all the evidence that exists on the topic of breastfeeding. It is the world's largest and most detailed analysis of the pros and cons, and the results are in. Dr. Caroline Lodge from Melbourne University's School of Population and Global Health led the research on the project as part of the Australian contribution to the team. And Caroline, hello.
Hello, Michael. How are you?
I'm well. I must admit that when I saw this story, I thought, oh, come on. I mean, it's a lay down as there. Don't we already know that breastfeeding is the best possible option if it's possible for you to do so? And yet there are some variations and perceptions that I need to change about that.
I think that's true. The evidence for breastfeeding with regards to childhood infections is pretty clear, and has always been pretty clear that it helps to prevent childhood infections. But the other
What kind of infections do you mean, though?
Mainly diarrhoea, respiratory infections, middle ear infections in children under 5 years of age.
And in fact, the results in middle ear are amazing, aren't they?
Yeah, they're pretty good. They're pretty good. So with middle ear infections, which was one of the reviews that we did from the Allergy and Lung Health Unit at Melbourne University and through the Centre for Food and Allergy Research at the Murdoch Children's Research Institute,
yeah,
our team covered this area and found that otitis media could really be reduced. The risk of having attack could be reduced by about half in children who were breastfed compared to those who weren't.
How important is it to be breastfed exclusively for certain periods of time for these kind of benefits to take effect?
Well, this is what the Lancet article was trying to find out in the mega review. So as you say, the literature's a bit confused. Some studies come out and they say positive things, some negative things, and some sit on the fence. So what the World Health Organization attempted to do was summarise all the most current and comprehensive summary of all of the effects of breastfeeding on health outcomes.
Right.
And to do this, they looked at various health outcomes and systematic reviews or review of all the literature on those outcomes.
So this is the first time every sort of study and research into the benefits or not of breastfeeding around the world have been coalesced into one meta-analysis, if you like.
Yeah, that's right. It's the most current and comprehensive review there has been. And it attempts in an unbiased, sort of objective way to assess all this information through systematic reviews, which are a particularly objective way of looking at the evidence and tend to take all the inconsistencies into account and iron them out to get an overall picture. And it's really the best evidence we have about breastfeeding at the moment.
So if I wish I could, but I can't, but if I was breastfeeding and I had my baby purely feeding from my breast for 6 months exclusively, no other food intake, what are the benefits of that?
So the benefits that they found in this mega review were largely that a reduction in infectious disease in early life, which we've already talked about.
Yeah.
They also found a reduction in malocclusion of the jaw, which is just the way your jaw meets, your upper and your lower jaw meets, and has follows on in later life with other diseases like tooth decay and cosmetic appearance and other health issues. They also found an increase in intelligence for children who are breastfed longer.
Now, this is one of the more controversial areas, yep, of breastfeeding. It has been for so long.
Yep.
And, of course, there's so much guilt laden with this for those women who, for whatever reason, choose not to or cannot breastfeed. What are the results in terms of IQ?
Well, in terms of IQ points, they found that breastfeeding increased the IQ by about 4 IQ points.
Is that significant?
For children. Well, yes, it is. I guess, you know, when we're talking about IQs of 100 to 120, 4 would be a little bit of an increase.
Mm.
But, you know, there are many, many other factors that affect IQ. Breastfeeding's not the only one, but this is the evidence at a population level concerning breastfeeding.
Globally?
Globally.
In those studies. And this is important,
globally,
isn't it? Because individual cases can vary, yep, but the epidemiological mass result points to the fact that breastfeeding may increase IQ.
That's right. But with all that, we need to consider the limitations of the studies included in the review. I mean, this is the best evidence we have so far. It's taken all of those little IQ studies, put them together, and come out with a figure. However, we've got to remember that our evidence is only as good as the studies that go in. And the studies that go in on breastfeeding for any of these outcomes are largely observational. And by that I mean we can't take a group of women and then divide them randomly so that every factor is even in both groups. So
why can't we do that? Why can't we do that?
Well, we can do that bit, but then we can't assign them to breastfeeding groups. We can't say that group breastfeeds their children, that group doesn't.
Is that because there are ethics involved in that?
Yeah, it's ethically unsound to say you can't breastfeed your child or you have to breastfeed your child. These are choices to be made by the mother within whichever choice frame she has.
So if that's the case, if you can't be as empirical as you would be in any other kind of scientific or medical study because of the ethics involved in that, does that therefore mean that the observational results have to be taken with a grain of salt?
Not exactly, because there are statistical methods now that try to assess all of these things, and particularly in these systematic reviews, we objectively set the parameters out beforehand. So for each of these outcomes, of which there were 28 included in this mega review.
28 studies?
28 mini reviews.
Mini reviews,
and the mega reviews summarised all the evidence from the mini reviews.
Gotcha.
So these 28, they each had protocols where they said, we're going to look at this particular thing, like we might be looking at the outcome of middle ear infection, breastfeeding, how it affects middle ear infection. We're going to search this way, we're going to select the studies this way, and then we're going to put together the information in this way.
Right.
And saying all that stuff ahead of time avoids biases where you might only pick the studies that show the results that you want, or you might only analyse them in a way that presents the results that you want.
So you're minimising those kind of skewing potentials by taking a more rigorous approach.
Absolutely. Rigorous methodological approach. That's exactly it. And then also at the end of that, when you do get a measure of the overall effect of a certain exposure on breastfeeding exposure on an outcome, then you have a look at that assessment and you say, how confident am I that that assessment is accurate, that actually reflects what's going on? And there's a new system where you can assess that in terms of the study quality going in terms of how much noise is around that, in terms of how many other things they've taken into account when producing that estimate.
My guest is Dr. Caroline Lodge. She's the University of Melbourne. She's from the University of Melbourne School of Population and Global Health Faculty. And we're talking about the latest research and analysis of other research studies and reviews around the world, courtesy of the World Health Organization, into the pros and cons of breastfeeding. And there's been some most interesting conclusions drawn, which we're pulling apart at the moment. If you have any thoughts on this, if you decided not to breastfeed, or in fact you persevered with it, what governed those choices, and were the results what you wanted? 0418 226 576, 0418 226 576, that's my text line. And we have a Facebook page up as well at RN Afternoons, with a rather fetching photo of a baby peering into the camera over his mother's shoulder. So if you'd like to leave a comment there, you may. Now, sorry, Caroline, yes.
So I was going to say, we were talking about 6 months exclusive breastfeeding, 1 year.
Is the longer the better? Is that still the case or not?
Well, what the guidelines suggest in Australia is that you should exclusively breastfeed your child for 6 months, which means no nutrition or fluids other than breast milk.
Right.
And then that you should continue to breastfeed up to 12 months. The WHO recommendations, well, as up to and after 12 months if you want. The WHO recommendations extend that out to 2 years.
Although, isn't there some indications from the review within the study we're talking about that after 12 months there is a possibility of tooth decay associated with longer breastfeeding?
That was also one of the reviews conducted by my group. And the evidence from those studies is not good evidence.
Okay.
As we were talking about before, there were 63, I think, studies included in that assessment, and only a few of them had strong enough evidence to contribute to the risk estimates we could give. What we found was that breastfeeding in children up to 12 months was suggestively better for teeth than before, but after 12 months, children who continued to be breastfed had more tooth decay. But we think that might be confused with practices around breastfeeding, so that
Because I take it after the 12 months, there's every chance that there's other food intake going with the breast anyway, which is going to be another variable in terms of sugar and whatever else is going into the mouth.
None of those studies had really controlled in any way for diet or socioeconomic status. And we also found a link between breastfeeding practices. So children who were fed to sleep and had breast milk pooling in their mouths were more likely to get caries as well. So it might just be the practice of breastfeeding and the other things.
Now, why is it? I'm astonished by this. Why is it that in this country, according to the latest figures we have, which I think date back to 2011, so I take it they haven't moved that markedly in the last 5 years, is that only 30% of babies in this country are being breastfed up to 12 months, and only 18% of babies are being exclusively breastfed for 6 months. I find that amazing.
Yeah, that's it is amazing. Those
so low, I mean, is what's so amazing.
Recommendations have been around for a while, since about 1990, and updated more recently. And even in that's in high-income countries like us, those are the sorts of figures you see. In lower middle-income countries, the figures double, so the percentage exclusively breastfeeding and continuing to breastfeed are double that, but still not up in the levels that you would hope for.
And is there a correlation between, sorry to interrupt, but is there a correlation between the demands of work in higher income countries on women's time that means they're precluding themselves from letting the child be at the breast?
Yeah, there are a number of factors that contribute to whether or not you continue to breastfeed. In Australia, I think it's like 92% of people establish breastfeeding, but then it drops off rather rapidly after that.
That's interesting.
So the continuation of breastfeeding is the problem, and that's all sorts of issues. I mean, there are cultural and social issues, the acceptability of breastfeeding in public.
Which is still a vexed issue in this country, I think, even now, you'd have to say. You see outcries in various parts of, you know, our society, for example, in Parliament.
Yes.
who won't forget that time when a woman who was breastfeeding a member of Parliament was actually ejected.
Yeah. And also, as you say, the work commitments are probably one of the greater factors, because many women work now, and finding that time off work to feed your baby is not hard, and going back to work and feeding your baby at the same time is very difficult.
So does that mean we need to have employers come on board with a more flexible approach to providing a space and a safe environment for breastfeeding mothers who want to go back to work?
I think that would certainly be a step in the right direction for mothers who can and wish to continue breastfeeding when they're working.
Caroline, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much, Michael.
We've only just scratched the surface with Caroline, but I think we've got the conversation started. Dr. Caroline Lodge from the University of Melbourne School of Population and Global Health, and she was one of the leaders from the Australian contingent feeding their data into this World Health Organization sort of mega conglomeration of study and review on breastfeeding pros and cons.